This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The following production is part of the We Be Geeks podcast collective.
From days long ago, from uncharted regions of the universe, comes a legend.
The dream that came through a million years, that lived on through all the tears.
It came here, the Fandom Nexus.
Fabulous secret powers were revealed to our host as he plugged in his microphone.
I have a podcast!
Here he is, your Spider-Pan, Jeremy.
Hello! Yes, it's time for another week with me. I hope you had a fantastic weekend with Memorial Day weekend and remembered some fallen loved ones and, of course, our fallen soldiers. I hope you spent a little time on that. It's always a weird holiday for me because my birthday always falls on it and my anniversary as well. And, you know, I guess I'm not uncommon. There are some weddings that happened over this weekend. I've had some of my cousin's children getting married and saw a lot of different weddings actually happening over this weekend. But I hope you enjoyed it. I actually managed to get out on Monday and see the Disney 100 exhibition here at Union Station in Kansas City. I recorded some audio there, and I took a lot of photos. I'm posting those photos up into the Facebook group and fan page for the Fandom Nexus. So if you want to see those photos, go and check them out there. I'll try to put a gallery of them on NeverlandPodcast.com, specifically attached for this episode. I got to remember, I'll post them all up there as well so you can see some of these. I'll talk about it, though, later. I won't say whether I recommend it or not yet. I'll post some photos and we'll talk about it later. I recorded, like I said, my wife came with me. I brought a recording device that doesn't sound as good as I should like, but, you know, I fixed up the sound and I think you'll enjoy that. We've got a lot of other things to talk about today. We did also go out and see Garfield on Saturday, so I've got a review of that for you. And we only have really one news story to discuss, and that is the passing of Richard Sherman. And the Walt Disney Company posted a very nice remembrance of him, and I'm just going to read that for you. So that's pretty much what I've got planned for the show. Lots of different fun things. Those of you who wish me a happy birthday, thank you. I am now officially 47 and now have been married for 21 years. So thank you for all your well wishes. I do appreciate them. So, you know, a couple of questions that I usually do at the beginning of the show, I haven't done in a while. What have you been watching? And I can't think that there's any specific thing that I've been watching other than YouTube. You know, but what have I been playing? Here, this ends up being an interesting story, right? So Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. I was starting up a third playthrough. I'd set it on hard. I'd done a few advised, you know, setups for, you know, what materia characters are carrying and that kind of thing. And I was, you know, kind of marching along, but I would get to where I would have a major boss battle and I would get defeated. Then I would find a solution for it. Then I would get through it. But I got tired of getting my butt whooped and then having to go online to say, okay, what do I need to maybe change here and getting suggestions? Cause I don't mind looking online. I mean, I'm of the generation we used to get like gaming magazines and we'd read for strategies and everything. We're like, oh, that's interesting. Let me try that. You know? So I'll go and I'll look online. I'll go to different websites and say, well, what do you all recommend? And, you know, looking at that, and there's YouTube videos on this kind of thing. That's kind of what we do, right? But I kind of got tired of doing that. I was like, you know what? I never finished Kingdom Hearts. And so I thought I'd go through and start over again on Kingdom Hearts. But this time, you know what? Just to make it easier on myself, I was just going to set it on easy just so I could go through and play Kingdom Hearts. Because I've had that, the collection that's like Kingdom Hearts 1 and 2 and some in between that I think were straight to handheld games. And I was like, you know, I'm just going to play through that. And I'm remembering some of the things that were frustrating about Kingdom Hearts, where, you know, of course, the camera control and some of that is not as refined as what we're used to now these days. And there's definitely not a lot of hand holding, I guess, which some people would probably appreciate. But there's a lot of time you're like, where am I supposed to go? Where am I going? And I'm in the Tarzan deep jungle area, and you're basically going back and forth between like three or four screens. And you have to constantly do these annoying vine swinging platforming things. And I do not like 3D platforming. But yeah, all this to say, I'm finding all the things that I remembered being annoyed with that game with, that probably are some of the reasons that when I finally got to Ursula and I kind of figured out how to beat her, but I just couldn't beat her. And I was like, okay, I'm going to sit this one out. But I'm going to complete it. I'm at least going to get through Kingdom Hearts 1, and then maybe I'll jump off of that. And I want to play Final Fantasy 16 because that's sitting here waiting for me to play as well. So I've got games to play. Other than that, I've been playing with Philip, playing the WWE 2K24 with him over his place. There's a little bit of video up on the Neverland official gaming channel. I think I'm going to post some stuff on the Spider-Pan YouTube channel as well. I have my own YouTube channel where I post stuff. There are some similar items, but it's a slightly different channel. But I'm going to post some more wrestling gaming video that I think I've got stuff from previous games I haven't even shared. But so if you're into that sort of thing, come and check that out. Other than that, of course, I am posting. I'm editing down what I'm calling story mode for Final Fantasy Rebirth, where basically it's the cutscenes or any bits of dialogue that happen within game that just kind of tell the story of the game. And I'm editing those together and releasing those as I get them done over at the Neverland official gaming channel. So come and subscribe, check it out over there, and I would appreciate it. And you hopefully will enjoy it. But that's pretty much what I've been doing with playing. And now I'm going to get into our one news story, and we'll get right into that.
Spanning the Disney and geek universe to bring you the best in comics, toys, movies, and entertainment. This is news from around Neverland.
Okay, so this from the WaltDisneyCompany.com. It's a nice little page there that says, Remembering Disney Legend Richard M. Sherman. And let me just read this to you. Disney legend Richard M. Sherman, half the Academy Award-winning songwriting team of the Sherman Brothers, with his late brother, Disney legend Robert B. Sherman, passed away Saturday, May 25th at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in Beverly Hills due to age-related illness. He was 95 years old. One of the most prolific composer-lyricists in the history of family entertainment and a key member of Walt Disney's inner circle of creative talents, Richard garnered 9 Academy Award nominations, winning 2 Oscars for his work on the 1964 classic Mary Poppins, won 3 Grammy Awards, and received 24 gold and platinum albums over the course of his 65-year career. His career ran the gamut from the early days of rock and roll with such hits as You're 16 and television to Broadway and Hollywood. Generations of moviegoers and theme park guests have been introduced to the world of Disney through the Sherman Brothers' magnificent and timeless songs. Even today, the duo's work remains the quintessential lyrical voice of Walt Disney. The Sherman Brothers were perhaps best known for their work on Mary Poppins in 1964, for which they won 2 Oscars for Best Score, Substantially Original, and Best Original Song for Chim Chim Cheree. Another chair song from the film, Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, became a pop hit, entering the Billboard Hot 100 in 1965, while the lullaby Feed the Birds became one of Walt's favorite songs ever. Richard Sherman was the embodiment of what it means to be a Disney legend, creating along with his brother Robert the beloved classics that have become a cherished part of the soundtrack of our lives, said Bob Iger, CEO of the Walt Disney Company. From films like Mary Poppins and The Jungle Book to attractions like It's a Small World, the music of the Sherman Brothers has captured the hearts of generations of audiences. We are forever grateful for the mark Richard left on the world, and we extend our deepest condolences to his family. Pete Docter, Chief Creative Officer of Pixar Animated Studios, said, "You don't get songs like A Spoonful of Sugar without a genuine love of life, which Richard passed on to everyone lucky enough to be around him. Even in his 90s, he had more energy and enthusiasm than anyone, and I always left renewed by Richard's infectious joy for life." The Sherman Brothers were professional optimists who found a perfect patron in Walt Disney. Their songs had an upbeat outlook that spilled over into Richard's life, which was not without its troubles and challenges. said Leonard Maltin, film historian, author, and educator. He was especially proud that he and his brother carried on a songwriting career like their father, who encouraged them early on. Born on June 12, 1928 in New York City, Richard and his brother would years later go on to follow in their Tin Pan Alley songwriter father's, Al Sherman's, footsteps. The Sherman family relocated to Beverly Hills in 1937 after years of cross-country moves. Richard attended Beverly Hills High School before he majored in music at Bard College. Drafted into the United States Army, he served as a conductor for the Army Band and Glee Club from 1953 to 1955. In 1951, Gene Autry was the first to record a Sherman Brothers song, Gold Can Buy You Anything But Love, but the songwriter's big break wouldn't come until 7 years later when Mouseketeer and fellow future Disney legend Annette Funicello recorded their song Tall Paul. That tune peaked at number 7 on the charts, selling more than 700,000 singles. The success of such songs caught the attention of Walt, who hired the Sherman Brothers as staff songwriters for the Walt Disney Studios. The first assignment, write a song for the made-for-television movie The Horse Masters in 1961, starring Funicello. Soon, they would contribute to such feature films as The Absent-Minded Professor in 1961, The Parent Trap in 1961, Summer Magic 1963, The Sword in the Stone 1963, Mary Poppins 1964, That Darn Cat 1965, Winnie the Pooh and the Honey Tree 1966, The Jungle Book 1967, The Happiest Millionaire 1967, The Aristocats in 1970, and Bedknobs and Broomsticks in 1971. They would ultimately write more than 200 songs for some 27 films and 24 television productions. They also contributed music for a number of theme park attractions around the world, including There's a Great Big Beautiful Tomorrow, the Tiki 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 Room, and It's a Small World, the latter of which Richard once described as a prayer for peace. In the early 1980s, the brothers returned to write songs for Epcot Center, now known as Epcot, and Tokyo Disneyland, including One Little Spark and Meet the World. In the early 1970s, the Sherman Brothers left the Walt Disney Studios to pursue other film projects following their work with Disney. The Sherman Brothers went on to provide an array of music, songs, and occasionally screenplays to such memorable family films as Chitty Chitty Bang Bang in 1968, Snoopy Come Home in 1972, Snoopy, okay, that just jumped in my head as soon as I read it, Charlotte's Web in 1973, The Adventures of Tom Sawyer in 1973, Huckleberry Finn, easy for me to say, in 1974, and The Slipper and the Rose in 1976. The Sherman Brothers made history in 1973, by becoming the only Americans to ever win the first prize at the Moscow Film Festival. The Russian equivalent to the Oscar was bestowed to the Sherman Brothers for their film musical, The Adventures of Tom Sawyer, for which they penned the script and songs. In 1976, The Slipper and the Rose was selected for Great Britain's annual Royal Command performance. This film similarly features a Sherman Brothers screenplay and musical song score. Richard and his brother were inducted as Disney legends in 1990. In 1992, Walt Disney Records released a retrospective collection of their music, the Sherman Brothers, Disney Supercalifragilistic Songwriting Team. The brothers returned to the studio in 1998 to compose music for the Tigger movie. That year, they also penned their autobiography, Walt's Time from Before and to Beyond. In 2009, a second compilation of hits, the Sherman Brothers Songbook, I have that one, was released, and their life stories were told in the documentary film The Boys, the Sherman Brothers Story, directed by Richard's son, Gregory V. Sherman, in collaboration with Robert's son, Jeffrey Sherman. I think I've seen part of that. I need to watch the whole thing. I bet it's on Disney Plus. In 2005, Richard and Robert were inducted into the Songwriters Hall of Fame. 3 years later, the brothers were awarded the National Medal of Arts for unforgettable songs and optimistic lyrics that have brought magic to the screen and stage. The Sherman Brothers' music has helped bring joy to millions. During the ceremony held at the White House, First Lady Laura Bush noted, "These medals recognize great contributions to art, music, theater, literature, history, and general scholarship." Recipients of the National Medal of the Arts represent the breadth of American creativity and the depth of the human spirit. In 2010, Richard and fellow award-winning composer John Debney collaborated on the song Make Way for Tomorrow Today for Marvel Studios' Iron Man 2. That same year, the Walt Disney Company saluted the Sherman Brothers for their musical contributions to Disney parks worldwide. They were honored with their very own window on Main Street, USA at Disneyland Park in California, which states, "Two brothers, tune makers, Richard M. Sherman and Robert B. Sherman, will write your tunes for a song." Richard was preceded in death by his brother in 2012. The following year, actors B.J. Novak and Jason Schwartzman portrayed Robert and Richard, respectively, in Saving Mr. Banks, 2013, a dramatized account of the making of Mary Poppins. 5 years later, the Walt Disney Studios in Burbank, California, rededicated Stage A as the Sherman Brothers stage. At the time, Richard said, "It's been a joy, it's been an honor, and it's been a privilege to work here at the Walt Disney Studios, working for Walt Disney and all the brilliant, brilliant people with whom Bob and I associated through the years. In 2015, a television special chronicling his life, Richard M. Sherman, Songs of a Lifetime, produced by Disney legend Don Hahn, debuted in PBS Southern California. Also in 2015, for the Disneyland Resort Diamond Celebration, Richard contributed the song A Kiss Goodnight, for which was tied to his 2017 book of the same title from Disney Editions. I have a copy of that as well. For the Walt Disney Studios, Richard wrote new lyrics for the live action of The Jungle Book, and 2 years later appeared in Christopher Robin, for which he composed 3 new songs. Most recently, Richard wrote a new song with composer Fabrizio Manicelli for Disney legend Andreas Deja's 2023 animated short, Mushka. The song entitled Mushka's Lullaby was sang by acclaimed soprano Holly Cedillos. In 2023, Walt Disney Animation Studio revisited its 100-year history in the short film Once Upon a Studio. Richard returned to Walt's office, the same place he and Robert would often perform Feed the Birds for Walt on Friday afternoons, to play piano in a key sequence. Richard is survived by his wife of 66 years, Elizabeth, son Gregory, and grandsons William and Matthew, daughter Victoria Wolf, son-in-law Doug Wolf, and grandchildren Mandy and Anthony. He is also survived by his daughter from a previous marriage, Linda Rothstein, as well as her 2 children and 3 grandchildren. A private funeral is scheduled to take place Friday, May 31st at Hillside Memorial Park and Mortuary in Los Angeles. Plans for a celebration of life will be announced at a later date. And I thought that was very well written, and I think he says more than I could say other than, of course, you know, how the music has been, of course, part of my life since I was a child, with watching Disney films and being a fan of, and I have determined that my favorite animated, I thought was Beauty and the Beast, but no, it's got to be The Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh, and of course, that features music from them. And my favorite Disney live action is still Mary Poppins, which, of course, features music from them. So the Sherman Brothers have definitely left a legacy in a lot of people's lives, including my own. And I was kind of surprised, you know, not entirely surprised. I mean, he was getting older. But see, he had passed away. It did kind of like, you know, it hit me when I read it. It popped up in the message thing. I was over at Philip's house. We were playing games, and I saw that pop up on my message feed and had to say something. It's like, oh my goodness, Richard Sherman has passed away at 95. So thank you for all the memories, Richard and Bobby, both of you. Thanks for all the memories. Now, if you go to NeverlandPodcast.com, you can find a big logo for Dubby. And of course, if you happen to be a gamer, you want a good energy drink that doesn't give you the shivers or the shakes. And Dubby is just such a drink. You can order yourself from a lot of different flavors. You mix it with some water. There's even drink bottles there. And you get a nice discount if you go and you click on the link through my website or, of course, the discount code Neverland. So that is what I have for you right there from Dubby. So go and help me out and check it out. And now we'll do a quick visit to the trailer park.
Mama, now the gator got in the house.
Now the gator? Give me that shovel. Come here. Ooh.
Get him off! Get that guy!
The Neverland Trailer Park.
Now, the first thing I have for you, it's not like a normal trailer. It's actually a clip from a documentary that's available to watch right now on Paramount Plus, but good enough for me. I think you'll enjoy
it. My first encounter with the turtles was a call from my agent.
I mean, it was really nothing, no big deal. I mean, it was great to get a show.
My agent called me and said, you have an audition for a show called Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I said, what?
Stu, the director, came in, and he says, you guys are not going to believe this. I'm going to be directing this new show, and I want to bring you guys in on it. But look at this. And he opens his bag, and he pulls out a copy of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, one of the original comics.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
Yeah. It was just the mix. It was the chemistry. Everyone had to have chemistry, but particularly the 4 of us had to really feel like roommates.
Yeah, we don't get many humans down here.
Tonight I dine on turtle soup.
I remember the first session when I came in, and from the very first session that I met all these people, and it was a party. It was a joy.
Originally, when we first started doing it, they didn't know whether Townie or I, who was going to be Leonardo and who was going to be Michelangelo. And we were supposed to then switch back, and they never did.
They sort of wanted kind of, you know, the surfer dude, kind of alley guy stuff. And the only thing that I could think about at the time was sort of a Sean Penn in Fast Times at Ridgemont High. And so I kind of, you know, drew upon that and did a bit of my version of that.
Let's show them the turtles know how to party.
We've got to practice.
you know, that was pretty much, I felt like I was the professor in Gilligan's Island.
Well, no matter how it happened, it's up to us to do something.
And he said, just kind of be yourself with Donatello. So I was. I mean, I just, you know, this is my voice. And I just kind of pitched it up here.
Welcome aboard the Turtle Blimp.
It's almost Shakespearean. It's almost over the top and Shakespearean in that sense. The same way I would do this, I would go, mislike me not for my complexion, the shadow of the burnished sun to whom I am a neighbor and nearborn.
Killers! That's quite a brain you've got, Craig.
Of course it is. It's all I've got.
Underneath, secretly, I was playing a Jewish mother with Krang.
This is what I get. I shouldn't expect
anything else.
You know, they never knew, but it was funny.
I, in turn, named them after my favorite Renaissance painters.
They wanted him to sound like a very learned man and the sensei, you know, the teacher.
It's
news! Wait! Come back with my hiding place!
And when I had to do Vernon, I wanted to get as far away from that as possible, so I got into a little bit of a higher register. April, come on, let me do something. Let me get some credit.
You know, I came in one day and they said, you're doing Bebop.
I'm real good at video games.
I had to make it really low.
This is rock steady. And I just made him like a big dumb kid.
Third floor, lingerie.
And that is how they became the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Cowabunga, dudes!
Hi-ya!
I am Donatello.
I'm Shredder.
This is April O'Neil. Channel 6 News.
You should have seen some of the outtakes. These people are insane. This man is crazy.
The universe.
They're all crazy. Him, all of them together.
It was a pleasure being Splinter.
I've always been Donatello. Even before I turned green.
Wait till the world gets an eye full of this.
So this is available now apparently on Paramount Plus. I don't know when they made this. But you have all the original actors here of the animated series, and it's supposed to be on Paramount Plus. So I'm going to go and watch this later because I have not seen this. But while I was sitting here on this screen, I saw something for Star Wars Hunters official launch gameplay trailer. I don't know if there's anything to listen to in this.
Live on the Outer Rim Sports Network. Welcome, Hunters fans.
Here are today's combatants.
Let's show them what we got!
Right back at you!
Who do you look at? Respect the armor. You!
Excellent choice. The power of the dark side.
Ah! Ring it up!
Locked and loaded.
Are you ready? To squad roll!
Time to
take
the
drone! Ah! Take it with us, Goro! Power control!
Okay, so this is a Star Wars themed 4v4 battle arena inspired by famous locations throughout the galaxy. Choose from a roster of hunters, each with a unique ability set. Customize your hunters, master each playstyle, and rise to the top of the leaderboard. Star Wars Hunters will be available on mobile and Nintendo Switch on June 4th. So it's a gameplay trailer, official launch, but I guess the launch hasn't happened. I want to get in here. So is it only going to be on the Nintendo? Can I play it on my PS4 or anything else? I don't know. It's a, you know, mobile game. I can't imagine this not being on any other systems. But right now it just says Nintendo Switch, iOS, and Android. Okay. Well, I mean, it's probably, I bet it's because they're going on mobile. I bet it's like a free to play, but then perhaps a little bit of pay to win going on there. Some extra money coming in. I might look into this on Nintendo Switch, but I'm kind of wondering why it's not on other systems. That seems like dropping the ball just a little bit. Okay, well, let's get on to what's next. I bet you already watched this one.
Here's a preview. Be warned, it's intense.
I believe Grandpa's dead.
Death is hard.
Yeah, sometimes I think life is harder.
When I was a teenager, a trickster demon terrorized our entire family and tried to force me to marry him. I believed he was gone forever until you found this in the attic.
Ew. Who's Beetlejuice?
Don't ever say that name.
Beetlejuice.
No, Astrid! I am serious! If you say his name three times, he will appear.
Beetlejuice.
The juice is loose.
I'm gonna make you so happy.
The living. The dead. Can they coexist? That's what we're here to find out.
Where is Beetlejuice?
Where's Beetlejuice?
Beetlejuice!
Feel free to express yourselves. Don't be afraid.
You're a figment of my imagination.
Really? Is this a figment of your imagination?
Beetlejuice is back. Oscar-nominated singular creative visionary Tim Burton and Oscar nominee and star Michael Keaton reunite for Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, the long-awaited sequel to Burton's award-winning Beetlejuice. Keaton returns to his iconic role alongside Oscar nominee Winona Ryder as Lydia Deetz and two-time Emmy winner Catherine O'Hara as Delia Deetz and new cast members Justin Theroux, Monica Bellucci, Arthur Conti, and his feature film debut with Emmy nominee Jenny Ortega as Lydia's daughter Astrid and Oscar nominee Willem Dafoe. Yes, so there's even a bit of a synopsis in here at Warner Brothers' official YouTube channel. It says, after an unexpected family tragedy, well, no, we did expect it because the father in his personal life had some issues and they were not bringing him back. So, yeah, so he's dead. Three generations of the Deetz family returned home to Winter River, still haunted by Beetlejuice. Lydia's life is turned upside down when her rebellious teenage daughter, boy, I tell you what, she's bratty in that little bit of trailer, isn't it? Astrid discovers the mysterious model of the town in the attic, and the portal to the afterlife is accidentally opened. With trouble brewing in both realms, it's only a matter of time until someone says Beetlejuice's name three times, and the mischievous demon returns to unleash his very own brand of mayhem. Yeah, this, of course, I think we're all interested in checking this out. It's a sequel we kind of wanted, but didn't know how much we needed it. I, you know, that type of thing. But it looks like, you know, it's just some fun. And I think we're all just down for that. Some good old fashioned Tim Burton Beetlejuice crazy stuff. And it's coming into theaters September the 6th. I would have put it a little closer to Halloween, but, you know, close enough. It'll still be fun. All right. One last trailer. I want to play some audio for you. It's the official trailer, too, for Harold and the Purple Crayon. I'm kind of excited for this one, too.
Let's go have some fun.
Once there was a boy named Harold. With his purple crayon, anything he drew came to life.
Come on, everybody!
As he got bigger, so did his imagination.
Who's the porcupine? Let's go to the real world.
That's not how it works, Harold. You can't just...
Whoa!
Oh, that is how it works.
hoping one day...
We're going after him, right?
Mm-mm, nope.
They step right into our world.
It's so beautiful. Look at all the friendly people.
Weight loss, Smurf.
Here's my antlers. The real world is even cooler than I imagined it was going to be.
Look out! Are you okay?
My insides are coming to my outside.
I thought I saw a moose.
I'm a moose.
Oh my God, you have a concussion. Come on, Harold can do magic.
With this little guy, I can make whatever I want. You try.
That's spider fun.
Oh, now that is creative.
And terrifying. That's terrifying.
I'm gonna triple lock the door.
Do you know what brought you to life? It's what your crayon is made of. The most powerful, extraordinary stuff on Earth. Wax. Pure imagination. You can't use the crayon all by yourself. It's too powerful. Let me help you.
I don't trust him. He's up to something.
With this crayon,
nothing can stop me.
Moose, a porcupine.
We're gonna figure out how to stop that guy.
With this.
You'll have to do better than that.
Okay, I am getting really good at this.
What were you thinking?
Oh, no, honestly, I don't do a lot of thinking.
So, yes, that is Harold and the Purple Oral Crayon. I never read the book when I was a kid. I don't know if it even existed when I was a kid. But the movie's hitting theaters August 2nd with Zach Levi, and I usually enjoy him, so I'm in. So here's the description it has here on the Sony Pictures Entertainment YouTube channel. It says, inside of his book, Adventurous Harold can make anything come to life simply by drawing it. After he grows up and draws himself off the page book's pages and into the physical world, Harold finds, he has to learn about real life and that his trusty purple crayon may set off more hilarious hijinks than he thought possible. With the power of unlimited imagination falls into the wrong hands, it will take all of Harold and his friend's creativity to save both the real world and his own. Harold and the Purple Crayon is the first film adaptation of the beloved children's classic that has captivated young readers for decades. So it probably did exist when I was a kid, but I don't recall it at all. Also in here, you have Alfred Molina and Zoe Deschanel. So some other big names popping up in here. When I look at this, it reminds me, y'all remember Simon and he likes to do drawings? There was a cartoon, and then Mike, what is his last name on Saturday Night Live? Oh, wow. Austin Powers, Shrek, you know who I mean. He used to goof on it. I like to do drawings. Will you look at my bum, you bum looker? You know, he would do this ridiculous parody of Simon, but you all probably remember the cartoon Simon that would be little shorts. Usually attached to different shows we would watch. I think Sesame Street would show one occasionally. I think even Pinwheel would pop one up and everything. So, but he would go the headland of chalk drawings where what he draws has come to life in this other land. This also reminds me a little bit of Enchanted, of some sort of cartoony character who steps into the real world and now has to adapt to the real world. So, I mean, there's some stuff we've kind of seen before, but, you know, it looks like it's going to be fun. And all right, now the movies I'm going to go see are just lighthearted and fun, which is why my wife and I went to go see Garfield, which, oh, guess what time it is? It's time for a movie review. But before we do that, you know what? I better take a quick break halfway through the show here to have a couple of ads. And if you don't like hearing these ads, I tell you what, there's options for you. You can join our Patreon, and I have links right there in the show notes or on the website. Or you could become an exclusive member at Red Circle. You'll also find that link there in the show notes. Either way, you can get your own RSS feed where you can get a feed that doesn't have the extra ads put into the show. But I got to have some ads because it helps me pay for the show. So here they come.
He-Man and the Masters of the Universe will be back right after these messages.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Find all your 4th of July needs at low prices, all in the Kroger app. Get USDA Choice bone-in tender ribeye steaks for $7.99 a pound with a digital coupon. Limit 5, then buy 2, get 3 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Want to see a movie?
Yeah. Any good?
It was bad?
I'm fuzzy on the whole good, bad thing.
My eyeballs could have been sucked from their sockets.
I like it a lot.
The best movie ever made.
A Fandom Nexus movie review.
So my wife and I went to go see Garfield because I do enjoy Garfield. I love watching the old cartoons, you know, Garfield and Friends and the old specials. I haven't read the strip in a while because, well, it's, you know, we don't get newspaper anymore. Newspaper's not quite a thing, but I do get to see some stuff on, like, you know, the internet. You can have your Facebook feed or Instagram. You can have, like, the cartoons pop up, and I get see a lot of Snoopy still yet, some Peanuts cartoons, because I do enjoy looking at those. But I was interested in seeing a Garfield movie, as those of you who've listened to the show for a while, when they popped up and that a new animated movie for Garfield was coming out, I was pretty excited, like, yay. And I did find some comments that I think were taken from an article somewhere, but this was posted to Facebook and I just copied it over here. I don't know where the origination of this comes from, or don't know the origin of this, but let me just read for you what it said. It said Garfield creator Jim Davis admits he was bowled over by Chris Pratt as the voice behind the beloved Monday hating lasagna loving indoor cat in the Garfield movie. Chris has a great attitude in his voice and incredible timing, says Davis. I rate him a 10 for funny. And one of those things he does is really bring the Garfield edge and attitude to the character. And he so really understands the character and absolutely nailed him. He's great to listen to. You can sit back immediately and go, yep, that's Garfield. In the Garfield movie, the world-famous Garfield is about to have a wild and outdoor adventure. After an unexpected reunion with his long-lost father, played by Samuel L. Jackson, scruffy street cat Vic, Garfield and his canine friend Odie, voiced by Harvey Guilin, I think that's how you say that, and really all he had to do was bark, are forced with their perfectly pampered life into joining Vic in a hilarious, high-stakes heist. After nearly 50 years of comic strip stardom and hilarious TV specials, the Garfield movie brings together everything that audiences love about Garfield, plus a few things they never knew. For his part, Davis, who is one of the film's executive producers, says he was thrilled to see an animated film break Garfield out of his three-panel confines. It goes without saying that Garfield gets out and around more in animation. Otherwise, why animate him? Says the character's creator. Garfield has the same personality in both mediums. However, since animation is more than three frames, Garfield must get involved with the plot, demanding that he leave his bed. In animation, you have the luxury of time to tell the story, plus you get to use music, sound effects, and audible dialogue to execute the gags and drive the story. Davis says that he created the character to stand in contrast with the many dogs that were ruling the comics pages at the time. I saw a lot of dogs doing well. Snoopy, Marmaduke, Fred Bassett, you name it, he says. But there were no cats at the time, and I grew up on a farm with about 25 cats on average, and so I knew and loved cats. And I thought, well, if dogs are doing well, maybe I could use a cat. Cats are kind of standoffish, you know where a dog stands, but cats are aloof. Because of that, he says, it's natural to attribute human thoughts and feelings to cats. Garfield is a human being in a cat suit. Indeed, Davis says that Garfield's staying power comes in the fact that his millions of fans recognize themselves in his foibles. Cats, they're just like us. I hold a mirror to the reader and show them with a humorous twist, says Davis. We're made to feel guilty for overeating, not exercising, and oversleeping. Garfield relieves our guilt by enjoying all of those things. Garfield's frustrations are universal, agrees director Mark Dindal, who helms our lazy and sarcastic hero's first fully animated big screen adventure. He reminds people of their childhoods. The visual humor will always play. You can find Garfield comics from 15, 20, 30 years ago, and they don't feel dated because they're never really rooted in something specific to that time period. Says producer John Cohen, It's such an honor that Jim Davis entrusted us to be custodians of his creation. There's nothing that has made me happier than to hear his joy and enthusiastic reactions to the film over the course of production. And I have to agree. I think Chris Pratt did a great job from going for the more excitable, where Garfield's enjoying something, to being the sarcastic, dry, grumpy side of him. He, like all aspects of Garfield's character, Chris Pratt, I think, really did a great job. I was very pleased with his work. And Samuel L. Jackson, he's just fun anyway, given something, like, you know, this part. And there's other appearances like Snoop Dogg makes a short appearance. But we really did enjoy this movie. Had a lot of fun. It was definitely, I think, aimed at children. My wife and I both said that. It seemed to be aimed at to bring children in. And there were some kids in the audience, and I think they were having a grand time. There's a lot of slapstick. You know, it's a lot of Garfield eats, he sleeps, and he gets smacked in the face with something or goes flying into a tree. And it was a lot of just slapstick, silly, fun humor. There was nothing that you, if you bring small children in, there was nothing in there that you'd have to, like, you know, want to cover their ears. Like, oh my gosh, I can't believe they said that. You know, there's just nothing on there. It's just good, clean, silly fun. And I had fun just sitting there, just watching and going along. It was like a long episode of Garfield and Friends from back in the 80s. A great time. Definitely recommend this. Bring the kids, bring the whole family, and just have fun. Just kickbacks. And you don't have to take a bit of this movie seriously at all. It is really just a cartoon. Now, is it really like going to be this great, wonderful thing like you've seen, like, you know, like the Peanuts movie? I don't think it lives up to something like the Peanuts movie or even a Pixar level from when Pixar was on their A game. But it's just fun. And so that's why it gets a recommendation. It's not that it's a brilliant movie. It's just fun and goofy and silly. And that's really all you need from a Garfield movie. Okay, so now we're going to take a quick turn over. And I'm going to pass it over to myself, who is currently walking into a building, basically, when you hear me, walking into the Union Station building to see the Disney 100 exhibition. And my wife and I will share our thoughts on that exhibition. I feel like I'm going to share my thoughts right here, but I shared them all in there. And don't forget, of course, to check the show notes on the website, neverlandpodcast.com. I'll make sure I post some pictures there. Also, if you join the Facebook group and our fan page, pictures will be there as well. All right, so Heather and I, we're out here at the exhibit hall, walking into it. You want to add anything to it? Are you? No. Yeah, you're probably not going to say anything this whole time.
Maybe.
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 You'll probably have a thought about something.
Maybe.
All right, so the first room, of course, has got a lot of exhibits that would be local with Kansas City, and I actually found something very interesting. They actually have a letter from Walt Disney to Joyce. What was her last name? Joyce Hall. She was the founder, I believe, if I saw this right, of the Hallmark Gold Crown store here. Hallmark actually originated here in Kansas City, and there's communication between Walt and her to start greeting cards that had Disney stuff. And there's a really neat, I think this might be original artwork down here, that of the Disneyland castle. And there's like a little arrow thing to do with the website, but like postcards and stuff. And there's a little booklet here that has the Jungle Cruise.
There's another letter right here.
I guess I'll go look over here. To her, too. Oh, look, I wanted to get that and I missed out. I think Philip managed to get it. They have the keepsake from 2018 of the partner statue. Oh, man, I got to get pictures. There's a little puzzle here. See a Western Union thing to Joyce Hall. Arrive at Kansas City time, Municipal Airport Executive, always Walt Disney. Oh, so Walt came here to kind of look it over, I guess, even. Say, dear Joyce, encloses a copy of a letter I received from Mayor Bartle. Oh, I wonder where we get Bartle Hall. Together with my reply to him, as indicated in my letter, I would appreciate your writing him about people to people, as I feel that what he has in mind rather closely parallels your project. So there's another letter from Walt to Joyce Hall of Hallmark. I guess Hall makes sense for Hallmark.
Joyce is actually a new star.
Oh, really? He's a guy?
Yep.
Okay. Well, now we know Joyce is a guy. Yep. Named Joyce. Like a man named Sue. Our boy named Sue. All right. So all these things on the wall, I thought these were something about Union Station, but I guess they actually have stuff about...
Well, it's the Union Station exhibit, but this is all... This particular one's all about the relationship between Disney and Hallmark. Hall and Disney.
So Don Hall, son of Joyce Hall, remembers many meetings between the two men. So the early ones, the two discussed the possible opening of a Disney theme park on the property, an idea that was fairly quickly dismissed as unfeasible. Which property? Like here? Yeah, she's reading it silently. I feel like I'd want to read it out loud, but I mess her up.
Show her the parcel line that would become Crown Center.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because Hallmark, I think they still own Crown Center. I think.
Mm-hmm.
It might be owned by that hotel by now. Very interesting.
So yeah, instead of becoming a theme park, we have Crown Center.
So I would rather have taken the theme park, but they said it wouldn't be feasible. I wonder if it was anywhere similar to like St. Louis, the Early Hand Park, but they couldn't get the town or the city to pay for the parking. If the city would have just forked over to do the parking, we'd have had a park in St. Louis. It would have been underground, but still. Yeah, something that big, I guess, is a good sum up. So is that pretty much, I think, sum up? It was interesting of that.
Yeah, Mark of the Dreaming Trees.
Oh, yeah, I think they probably loaned this from up here because there's even a thing about the Walt Disney Hometown Museum on the wall.
Yeah.
Which I'm going to stop here. I want to get pictures of this stuff. Okay, so we went, basically moved through the first room in the line and got to see like a brief thing of history. I think this lady's here to scan us. Oh, no.
He's going
to
cut us off.
So we're in the main room. We thought we were going to actually get into the main exhibition. There was little things we could have stopped and listened to some cartoons that were playing.
Decade by decade. So
yeah, like decade by decade.
Mm-hmm.
I got some neat pictures. They had Fess Parker's actual coonskin cap. Bette Midler's actually Hocus Pocus.
Yeah.
I got pictures of everything. The home picture I post somewhere.
It was kind of like a collage of what happened during that period. Oh, here she's going to scan our tickets.
Thank you. Be nice and thank the lady for scanning our ticket.
Yep.
So we got like 4.5 minutes before we're actually allowed inside. But yeah, so there was a hallway where they had, it was kind of neat, a spotlight shaped like Mickey Mouse. And then like little clips playing as you walk by. And then there was these little kind of booth things where they had... Like we were saying,
the decades.
Yeah. Like Quiz Heather, she knew why you liked the first one from 1920s, 1940s that had hot dog printed on it.
Bam.
And now you learned something. That was Mickey Mouse's first words.
Well, and I remember I'm saying like there was something where it was like hot dog, hot diggity dog. But I don't know if that was the first time he said it. I just remember that was in a cartoon.
Yeah, that's in the newer cartoons, but that's why they did it.
Oh, okay.
Hot dog, hot diggity dog. Okay. Nice catch. Good for you.
Okay.
Oh, yes. So first words he actually said, he was selling hot dogs. So I can't remember what cartoon they say it is.
Well,
because Steve O'Willie, nobody really says words for a while. Yeah. Donald Duck is kind of similar. He shows up because he's selling, I think, hot dogs in the betting concert, but that's not his actual first appearance. He actually shows up in the, the little hen that's wanting to make bread. It's like, who's going to help me do this? And all that. Donald's the duck in that one.
Okay.
So that doesn't want to help her. I forgot what it's called. I know I've read that book. Okay, so as you go in, there's a presentation where they had a very AI'd Walt. Didn't even quite sound like him to me. I think they completely generated that.
I feel like it was enough of Walt to be original Walt, but yeah, you could tell AI had fixed him up a little bit, made him a little younger and it looked like something Walt would have put on the front of, one of his, this is how we do it sort of things. So, yeah.
But he had a certain cadence the way he spoke, and that didn't sound like it at all.
You would know more than I would.
Yeah. It just seemed off to me. But yeah, now we're in some early stuff. I'm going to read something out loud where I'm looking at it. Here it says, where it all began. 100 years ago, a young animation filmmaker signed a contract to produce a series of short films combining live action and animation, establishing, along with his brother Roy, the Disney Brothers Cartoon Studio. That young man was Walter Elias Disney. That studio eventually became known worldwide as the Walt Disney Company. So yeah, they're basically, we're in a room that's dedicated to the Alice comedies, which of course were started here with the Laugh-O-Gram Studio, with actually a local little girl that they moved out to California when they were going to get the contract to actually make more of them. Unfortunately, that contract also is part of what went bad on them. Eventually, they kind of got screwed out of Oswald eventually. And so, but at least it helped them get started.
Well, they have like the Alice comedies and Oswald the Lucky Rabbit. So I think this is going to be like a timeline.
Yeah, kind of a timeline of the early years. Okay, I'm going to stop and get a photo because they got a little, looks like a little thing that's for Laugh-O-Gram over here, like a megaphone. This is actually one that Walt used. He actually used my Walt to direct probably, I forgot. Why is it I cannot, it's Virginia something. I forgot the little girl's name. I bet it's on here somewhere.
I don't know. I don't think it's.
Well, there's, or Fred Harmon's mentioned over here. Or there's Fred Harmon helped him do that. That's nice. Anyways. So we were just looking at where I was talking about the telegram that they got from, I keep wanting to say Walter Mintz, but it's Charles Mintz. I get confused with Walter Lance. Charles Mintz kind of taking Oswald from them because they were actually working for Universal. And then the train ride of Lily and Walt coming back to Los Angeles. And there's a picture over here of Iwerks and the Origins of Mickey Mouse. And I was telling Heather about how they still had a contract to do a few more Oswald cartoons. So they had to finish the contract. So Ub would stay late and overnight would draw some of the early Mickey Mouse cartoons so they could get those started. So that's why I call Ub Iwerks probably the greatest animator ever.
there.
I mean, that's dedication. Oh, there's like Steamboat Willie storyboards here. I got to take pictures.
It's Sunday.
Okay, so now we just walked out of it. I didn't feel like I had time to stop and start this recorder as many times as there was something. And a lot of it, the information was stuff I knew. And people who have listened to me a long time back when they used to be a Disney show, you already would know the stuff anyway. But what did you learn? What did you not know?
I don't know. The sound effects, like how they made the sound effects, I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
Like they had to use a bottle and some other things. It's hard to explain on verbally.
Yeah, there's conversations we had in there I should have been probably recording. Because there was something you with Alice in Wonderland, you were kind of excited. There was artwork that I guess looked like the artwork was based around the book. On something you saw, was artwork that you liked with Alice in Wonderland?
I just liked the Alice in Wonderland. I didn't see anything like...
Well, but you were going like the artwork was like sort of the book and stuff.
Oh, yeah. One of the concept art that they had started off trying to make it look like the original illustrations in the book, which are kind of very enlarged heads. I mean, it's almost a little bit scary, you know, to our modern sensibilities, you know. So I was saying that I was glad that they kind of changed it a little bit. I mean, you still have like the Mad Hatter still had like a really big head, and everything was very still, you know, cartoony and that imaginative Wonderland kind of thing. But I kind of like that they did their own thing with it, rather than sticking to the original illustrations. Those are fine for the book, and I don't have anything wrong with them. But for the cartoon, I thought it worked better.
When Tim Burton came along live action, he decided he'd put a big hit on some people. So,
yeah, and I wonder if that's a nod back to that, but not everybody did. But see, in the original illustrations, you know, you had some of the people had a very large head, but not all of them, you know, and in the Tim Burton Alice in Wonderland, just the queen had the large head. And I don't know. I'm not sure why. Maybe that was a nod back to the original illustrations. I don't know.
Yeah, I think because it was in sections. By topic, and I think probably my favorite section was the story section, because you had props from the animated, and like they had the Snow White book that was used, the sleeping book.
The beginning of the intro.
And then they had some of the concept designs from Snow White and a lot of those classic animation films. Had a collection of a lot of different books where some of the stories have come from, like a Grimm's Fairy Tale book was in there that... That was probably my favorite room, is getting to see that and all the different designs going on for different, how the characters might look, how the film was going to look, and like the concept art was really cool to look at. Do you have a favorite part?
Well, I liked all the movie props. I liked all of the seeing the actual, or even if it was a replica of what they worked out, like the music or like the storyboards, or this is the original, you know, sketch of how we thought they thought the character was going to go, like that, those little things that went into the creating the building of the movie, being able to see them, that was kind of neat, because you can see them on specials on TV, but then to see them in person, you know, was different. And so I like those. Yeah, the movie props were good.
And seeing the stuff that where they made the sound effects for the animation, but I saw the chimes used for Tinkerbell.
Yes, those that I wish they could have had more of that, and maybe I wish they could have had more of that, because that's kind of like the unsung hero of these movies is, you've got the music and all the visual. They spent a lot of time with the visual stuff, but then they just seemed like they had just a small section for the music and then the special effects. But that is, the movies would be so much less without those.
Yeah. So there's animators that just do effects. Patty Peraza, I got to meet her once and everything, and she was an effects artist. And I was like, oh, that's stuff you don't even think about, but it brings the world to life, but you don't, you know, no one really pays attention to it. But you're like, no, this is the crucial stuff.
This is how the whole scene pays off.
Yeah. Like, this is how the water effects, it makes it real to you, even if it's, you know, animated, but stuff like that, you know, people who make the rain happen. It's like,
well, the frogs, the little thing that made the frog, how you made the frogs crooked in
the old mill.
I like frogs. I like frogs, so I kind of liked the scene.
It was like a weird thing. They played it with a violin bow.
Well, it was a coffee can. Yeah. It had like a string that went up through it, and there was a little...
It almost looked like a drum.
Almost like an arc that went over the top to hold the string up. And then he played it with the bow, and I couldn't see if the bow was like wrapped around the string. Like, you know, it was the friction of the string and the bow string that made the blah, blah. Or whether he just played it like a violin or something.
But how they think of it, that's worse. Like, hey, if I do this, it's going to sound like a frog. I mean, how do they think of this?
That takes a very special skill. And again, I feel like that's kind of like the unsung part of all of this, that, you know, to make it sound like it's supposed, you know.
Well, it won't even sound identical to what it is, but you have an exaggerated version of it, because then you believe it. If it's exaggerated, something you believe it. I've learned that with Adventures in Odyssey, when they'll talk about the sound department, that you don't create the real, you don't want to record the real sound. You want to create a version of it, which in college, I actually got to do a thing where we created sounds, because you want to do like accentuated, because then you believe it more.
Yeah.
Compared to sound like the real, like a gun in real life is like, you know.
Yeah, it's just, it has to clap. It's just a little, yeah.
But you put like all this kaboom in it, and now we believe it, and it's become story. So it's just weird. That was really neat. And then there was like the tube thing they had a picture of that was kind of interesting, that they were using it to make, I forgot what we saw they were making sounds with it for, but I was just.
With a whistle for Steamboat Willie?
Oh, no, they had the Steamboat Willie whistle, which I took a picture of because they actually had it there, but they had a picture of like this tubing, and they had the guy. Was showing it.
Oh, sound effects. It was for the buzzing. The buzzing of the dragonflies and the flies. The
rescuers.
Yeah.
It was the buzzy boat.
Yeah.
And how he was doing it. Just kind of neat. The sound effect room was really, really cool.
It was cool. It was just a small section, but like it was probably some of the more amazing stuff.
Yeah.
That, you know, because like I've said before, like we had the specials where they showed, you know, here's the artwork and here's the, you know, like kind of that stuff. But that they haven't talked so much about.
Yeah.
That part of it. Except for the Reluctant Dragon, part of
and they had clips of Reluctant
the
Dragon
movie.
Playing
mm-hmm.
to show you them making stuff. So yeah, that's what I was really hoping to see with the archives. I want to see the behind the scenes stuff and the pieces, and so seeing like mm-hmm. Fez Parker's coonskin cap,
yep,
and the Hocus Pocus book just on the way in, and then when you got inside, there's even the sketches of stuff, and oh my goodness, and seeing like the artwork that was like the when he put in the Honey Tree poster. Well, it didn't have the text on it, but it was like I recognized the artwork, and it was like they would have printed the text on it later and stuff for whatever uses. Just seeing all that stuff, and even though some things were, it was marked as being a replica, but a lot of it was the actual items. And it was so much like, ooh, I want to touch white book. I was like, ooh.
Well, and you can tell that when it was an original, because it was in its own container.
Yes,
and it was kind of dark so that the light wouldn't ruin like the, I think the one thing that you really just, ooh, was the snow globe for for Mary Poppins with the, because it was the actual one that
the
there.
Animation of the birds going around it just mm-hmm. so you kind of get the whole thing. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, so that was cool.
They had Mary Poppins' horse. From the carousel too.
Mm-hmm.
So, oh my goodness. So much cool stuff. So if it comes to your town or if it comes anywhere close, I do recommend you go check it out.
Yeah, and try to go at a time where it's not too busy so you get so you can take the time to peruse.
To look at everything.
I feel like we were a little rushed because we were the first ones in. It's Memorial Day, so everybody's taking
their
kids.
This is the opening weekend of it.
Yeah, you know, and there were some things that I wish I could have spent a little more time with, especially the, you know, like, well, this is the color palette for these characters. Like,
we didn't get a chance to it.
I wanted to do that, but they had so many of them and everybody just kind of... you know, wanted to do it, and it was something the kids could do and guess.
Yeah, try to guess what colors were what characters.
Yeah,
and stuff. It was pretty. Yeah. Did I even get a picture of that? I should have gotten a picture of that. Yeah. It was kind of neat. It's like here, because they're talking about how every character is assigned a color palette. These are the colors that must be mm-hmm. used. So,
but I did see one was like Wreck-It Ralph, and there was one for like Tigger. So I did see from over the shoulder people who were doing, you know, guessing, like you could see that they had some mixture of older and newer, you know, characters that they had in there.
So pretty neat. And it's kind of educational. A lot of stuff I already knew. And I was kind of telling you, it's like, okay, so this picture here, because they had some of the early history from Kansas City, but it's just neat looking at all the different movies.
That was probably because since we come from Kansas City, like that's probably some of the stuff that a lot of people don't know about is the, you know, Disney came from Kansas City and all of the interactions with Kansas City, even though we're not like, ooh, Disney, whoa, you know, like Disney's plastered all over, like, you know, we've got Chiefs plastered all over right now, you know, or Royals, but like, Disney did a lot for here. And
to find out the Crown Center was almost a Disney park before it became Crown Center.
Yep.
Oh, my goodness. Because they didn't think it was feasible. I'm like, doggone it.
Well, but I could see it with the downtown area, the way that it is and all the buildings. And how would you do it properly? I mean, you would take out
underground. That's what they were going to do in St. Louis.
Well, but even then, it would take a massive chunk of land above ground even if you put a lot of it underground, it's still going to take a lot.
Well, Walt didn't like to build the same thing twice, so it would have been a different kind of a Disney park.
Oh, but still.
So, but it would have been something different, because I mean, Marceline, he wanted to build one that was going to be about farms. And we wanted kids to experience farming a little bit. So who knows what it could have been. It could have been an amazing thing. But it's definitely worth checking out. Some of the stuff that's Kansas City stuff, I don't know, is traveling with it because it was very much native. And then I even found like Bank of America, who's the sponsor of it, because they're the ones that did the original loans for Snow White. And I took a picture they had a dedication from the current runner of Bank of America. And I took a picture of that. And they're going to have a speaker series here. And Kay Mallins is coming down from Marceline at some point. I'm going to try to find out when. I mean, her and Sumner are coming down. And then Bill Farwood's coming. So the speaker series is going to go on during the summer. I'm going to try to come along and I'm probably not going to be allowed to record, but I'm going to try to come and see those if I can, as long as it doesn't cost me an arm and a leg or something. But yeah, very cool exhibit. Definitely when it comes nearby, go check it out. I think it was fun.
Yep. So, yep.
Yeah. And Heather said, well, I didn't hate it.
Oh, I was joking when I said that. Yep.
Okay, well, we better wrap this show up. And so that means I got to remind you about Pod Engagement, which you can find that logo on NeverlandPodcast.com as well. If you happen to have a podcast and you want to be able to get some of your reviews from around the world or have an easy way for people to leave reviews, Pod Engagement has a solution for you. It's run by Daniel J. Lewis, a brilliant and wonderful guy. He even won some awards at the Podcast Movement this year. I'm very proud of him. He deserves it. He's just a good dude. We also, of course, want to thank Karen Kennedy, Ricky Pope of Christian Nerds Unite, and Darren Wilhite of the Wilhite and Wall Show for helping me out with the introduction. Don't forget, you can send us an email, podcast@neverlandpodcast.com. You can find us on Twitter or X, or on, of course, Facebook, as I've mentioned, Neverland PCast. I don't think Twitter, I've managed to change that. Just search for Neverland Podcast or the Fandom Nexus, and you're going to find it all. I believe, have links that hopefully still work on the website. I need to double check it because, you know, things have changed, and even the show has changed. Don't forget, you can join the Neverlanders on our website, become an official Lost Boy or Pixie. Why a Pixie? Because girls are too clever. They don't get lost. You just need to have yourself a nickname because we all have one. Heck, I'm the Spider Fan. Hi. And of course, don't forget, you can donate through our Patreon, patreon.com/Neverland Podcast. And of course, we say at the end of every show, get lost in an adventure. And we'll see you next time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.